the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy word for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
With
this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts: the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day! Oh, happy blessed place! Oh, happy blessed time! Oh, happy blessed path! Oh, happy blessed opportunity! In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi salaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
your
fear to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
This process, or I was just looking at it actually, this last part of it, and I saw something that seems obvious now that I've seen it, and that is that, you know, the whole thing of, well, first off, it goes with the process we do with movement, you know, of sensation, thought, and then our emotions and more than the behavior, thought and emotion, behavior. And what I was looking at in that is that I saw some process I do where the content it's content and then behavior, it's a knee-jerk reaction.
Something happens, you do X.
Yeah, and what I've practiced, you know, over the years is noticing the sensation, you know, backing things up and noticing the sensation and stopping there. That seems the shortcut to.
Mm-hmm. So trying to break that progression.
Yeah. Yes. And so what I saw in this particular case that there, I didn't see anything in between. There'd be the knee-jerk reaction, the content, the behavior, and then the behavior, of course, sets the chain going. That would be the movement, and then that would be, do
and
the next.
Around.
And that's where I, you know, see the sensations and the talk and notice all in there. And the first part, I never, it's just something I did. You know what I mean? It was just.
Do you mean the behavior?
Yeah, that the certain content led to that behavior.
Right, you just do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It never even had any conscious. I knew that I did this thing, but you know, I never had any conscious.
You didn't. It sounds like you didn't. You didn't. I mean, probably on some level, you kind of brought there was a process going on, but you didn't. At the same time, you didn't really brought there was a process going on. It's just automatic. What was happening?
Yes. And so this morning, actually, what I was looking at is this is what I noticed. Huh, there's this kind of a, you know, a situation or whatever, and then this is the behavior. Hmm. And I said, I'm missing the stuff in between, and that's the first time I ever even put it in that context.
And it's funny when we catch on to something like that, because there's a whole world that happens right there.
Yeah.
But we just go right by it without making
exactly. And so then I thought, well, I'm going to have to start looking for the sensations that come up, you know, because that's what I like. Seems to, you know, be the most helpful to notice. But then I thought, well, yeah, so that's kind of what I was thinking. All right, I'll really have to keep, you know, make it string out, you know, string it out so I can see the progression. And then it just came to me, I'll change the behavior. You see why that is so important on a lot of levels.
Uh-huh.
I'll change the behavior, and that way I can go back.
Yeah,
it will slow it down.
It's kind of it's a movement for a whole practice.
It is.
There is no consciousness without changing behavior. And it's funny because I'm with you. I mean, I always approach it from the other side. You got to break this the progression of the cycle as close to the point at which it originates as possible. And of course, that's a good way to do it too. But to be able to approach it from the other side, and to be present enough to make a different choice about the behavior, it messes with all of that other stuff that came before.
Yes, and exactly. And then what I was seeing is actually the only difference in the beginning might be accepting, you know, that oh, there it is, and I missed what went before, or maybe it won't, you know, maybe I will get the content, and the knee jerk might be, oh, okay, I'm going to do something different, I'll reflect, or I'll, you know.
Yeah. Well, it seems pretty likely to me anyway that in order for you to do that. You're going to have to be aware to some extent of everything, of what's happening before, or else you're just going to go unconsciously from the trigger to the behavior over and over again.
Yes, but the trigger, I'm hoping, because this has been the case a lot of the times, will be what wakes me up. If not, that's what I'm saying, I have to accept it, but that's a different, and I'll know what process I'm doing, because before, there it just wasn't a process.
And it might even become aware of it afterwards. We read, as you're talking, I was thinking about this book we read that got passed to the monastery a long time ago about how your brain works and different things.
Yeah.
And there was one part about it in there where the guy who wrote the book was working with people with, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
And I may be making this up, but what I remember about it was, so like let's say the compulsive behavior was to, I think the example was to go check to see if the oven had been turned off. Like the person, you know, it was paranoia that it had been turned off. And so what he did with people was he trained them to, as soon as they noticed that that's what they want to do, they would go garden instead. And so it's like he trained way at the end of that progression you're talking about.
Yes.
But I don't know what happened with him, but I bet you with us, if we could, you know, I notice I'm heading towards the, here comes the behavior, I'm just going to, without even knowing why or whatever, just because I can see I'm doing that, I'm going to take a right turn, and I'm going to go over here and do this other thing.
Yes.
Then that's going to interfere with the whole, because then there's no payoff in everything that came before. It's going to interfere with all that other stuff that's going on.
Yes, and you know, that's how I intend to practice with it. You know, that's the ideal, and as you're saying. I'm sure, because this is what happened with everything else. You know, I end up in this behavioral mess kind of thing, you know, with all the karma that comes with it. And started looking back and noticed, you know, the first one I ever did was strong emotions. So I'd come in on the emotion part, you know, and could back it up to sensation.
What happened right before that?
And then so it didn't lead to the, you know, strong emotions, like the thoughts led to unfortunate behavior. It was obvious. but so I thought, well, I'll come to it, make that the trigger, and it did, because I could feel that, and then go to the sensations, and then I never had, you know, when that kicks in, which is, you know, I don't have the problem with the behavior after that. So, but with this, yeah, it seems like it will, when the behavior gets changed, it will then, I will see the process, because I'll be awake, at least at the behavior. Even if I did it, I'll be awake.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than not know it was a process. And then I can start looking back and seeing, you know, what came before that, what came before that, until I'll notice the sensation that's at this point is, you know, just hasn't been there. I'll notice it and be able to. That's how it generally goes. So, so I saw a whole new meaning to changing the behavior. I mean, it's a win-win on both ends. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just to change it is
you don't have to do the behavior.
it's a win, and yet it also to lead it backwards to the whole process is also.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, there's another part to this. I can't say that I see exactly how it fits together, but it keeps coming up for me as you're saying it. So just to put it out that something that has been kind of coming through the practice pipelines here in the recent times, and Sherry said it the other night, was something along the lines of, folks might have to tell me out a little bit, but that, you know, so we have a way in which we're watching conditioning, and even when we're, can anybody help me with this? Does anybody know where I'm at? Jen?
I don't know if you're referring to, so we see the process, and we get, and but if that's what where our attention is engaged, we're still in conditioning's world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still engaged with conditioning. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so that, I couldn't find the words for it, but that it keeps coming up as you're saying that, because I don't know, there's a way in which it seems like everything you're saying is so, and yet it's possible for the looking to be another behavior. I guess that's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. And so there's a way in which everything you're saying is so, and we can kind of bump it back to a level in which none of that, there's a larger world than just me and that conditioning.
Exactly. I know what you mean, because to me it's the difference between looking at it identified and looking at it from center. And then it's, for me, anyhow, that's a whole different ballgame, because then I'm really excited and I'm seeing stuff. And it's short. But looking at it when I'm conditioning, identified, it's kind of it's a whole, gosh, this and this and this and this, and, you know, it's a whole different feeling to me. And
we might say that with the first type, we're only looking at it to the extent that we see that it's conditioning.
Yeah.
So that we can let it go and then turn our attention to life as it's unfolding, all the beautiful, and all beauty that's here, and all those kinds of things. I think there's a temptation for us, especially for, you know, long-term practitioner types of folks like we are, that to continue to be involved in that relationship with conditioning and in the kind of looking at it and figuring out. It's like conditioning kind of takes on that as the next behavior that is going to attempt to keep, you know, invisible to us.
Yes.
You know, that becomes the, you know, the stimulus is, here's what conditioning is doing. The behavior is look at conditioning.
Exactly.
And then it just kind of has got us in the same loop. It's only backed it up a few levels.
Yeah, yeah, and that reminds me of something else I see a lot, is that, you know, oh, there's conditioning talking and there's conditioning believing. Mm-hmm. And it's that same thing when it's in, you know, when I'm not realizing that, it's like I'm one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I realize that, it's again, it's a whole different thing, because you can see, you know, conditioning, or, you know, voices talking, and then the part believing it, and that's part of it too, you know, then to go to the part believing it and let go of this. And anyhow, it's all really, really exciting, and it's amazing when of course when I'm not identified, it's like seeing it all in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am, it's not like seeing it at all.
Great, thanks. Jen.
I really appreciate that opening. As the conversation was beginning, I was seeing something I've been looking at, and then that thing you threw in feels like that's it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a, because, you know, I often talk about things hiding in plain sight, and it's that sense of there's this little tiny karmic knot that's just, boy, it's just there, it's there, it's there, it's there. I suspect that actually it's been a gigantic karmic knot, right, and that there's a ton that's been worn away in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of this, as the conversation was beginning, I could feel this enthusiasm for sort of the spirit of inquiry with it this morning, as the, ooh, that's okay, all right. So what it feels like is there's some fundamental maintenance of the relationship with conditioning in there that is going unseen.
Do you mean, just to clarify, do you mean in the knot itself or in your relationship
in
with
my relationship to the knot.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What it feels like is the behavior is an emotional reaction, if you can.
An emotional reaction?
Yeah. That feels like the place that there's an I trying to change.
Uh-huh.
So just like was talked about, something happens, boom, the hole, it's like, you know, mm-hmm. fuel on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something in, and it feels like one of the places that maintains it is, wow, gotta change that. You know, when is that gonna be different? You know, this is crazy. This is crazy. How can that happen again?
So let me see if I'm with you. So at one point there would not have been of that, because you would not have been, I mean, there would have been a really bad that, but you wouldn't have been aware of it, so that there would have been no relationship.
Yes.
You very likely would have been doing the same process, but in a way that did not have a pseudo-practice as an element to it.
Yeah.
But then the that becomes, you're practicing awareness, so that becomes something you're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And so that process has to, you know, that's kind of sort of a subject-object process has to move to, instead of like, let's say you in the old days, and you and whatever the content was,
uh-huh.
in a relationship with that trying to change it.
Yes.
Now it's you and the process that's happening with that root thing trying to change it. But the process is the ultimate process is the same.
Yeah. So when you said the subject, obviously that's really interesting, because I've been I wonder if you could say more about that. So I think what you're saying is, originally, I'm the subject working on the object of the content. Right, and now I'm still the subject, and the content is the process.
The process that you used to do over here, because you're no longer doing that process.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of is happening, but you're kind of now you're watching conditioning do that process. It's conditioning that's doing it.
Yeah.
You can see, but actually, conditioning's kind of sneak back here.
Yeah. So, yes. Mm-hmm.
I'll say something while you think of the next
one. What I really want to say is, so what do I do? But we don't say that.
We don't think so. Well, what I think when we start off with was the spirit of inquiry.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And what I was imagining that you were implying in that was that, so for that thing to be going on that you were just talking about, your attention, it's kind of like we were talking about in the previous conversation,
yeah.
Your attention is engaged in it.
Right.
And so it makes you real, and it makes conditioning real.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
With the spirit, what I was curious about as you started was, well, gosh, how does the spirit of inquiry fit into this other possibility that mm-hmm. Sherry was talking about, where we're not in relationship with that,
mm-hmm.
we're in relationship with life, and what I thought you were implying in that is mm-hmm. that your attention, when the spirit of inquiry, your attention really isn't on conditioning, it's on life, because that's where the information is coming from.
Yeah, that's what I was saying too when you were just saying that, is in the spirit of inquiry, that's the attention is in life, is with life. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's an interesting, really interesting little place in there. It's one of those subtle but probably gigantic places where the identification with the person who really thinks that, believes that, da 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 da. Boy, it's tricky to turn the attention to the. It's obvious the awareness is there. It's mm-hmm. got to be there the whole time because, you know, I can report blow by blow
mm-hmm.
later on or even during it, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can report about it.
Mm-hmm.
But to shift that attention, because of course the identification can't be in relationship with life.
That's what I was saying too. In your case, she can't probably.
Right.
She can't do that.
No.
At the same time, you know, you said earlier that, you know, so there's this knot that's probably been a very gigantic knot that's been worn away over time.
Yeah.
So it's almost like I have this experience all the time too that I'm projecting. I don't know if this is what you're saying, but it's like I'm doing practice,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm in there doing practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but where I think practicing is happening is not where it's happening at all.
No.
There's this whole other thing. Awareness is actually doing practice, but I sort of assume I'm this I that's smaller than that doing this thing. So I'm trying to do this, I'm trying to fix that, trying to figure this out. None of it really is happening.
That's a good point.
But this other really amazing thing that's happening almost kind of, almost against my will.
Yeah. Against the will of that
against
identity.
The will of that.
Mm-hmm. And in my experience, stepping back into that, into awareness, it's like, wow, that knot has gotten really small.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That perspective is back there. And it's like, how many recordings do I have? It's like, oh, I swear. Okay, you're going to get in this place where you're going to think that that is every, but it really, really isn't. It's all part of it. Don't worry about it. But then, of course, in it, it's like, no, it's really, it's amazing. It's such an interesting, and that's definitely my experience, that there's something else doing, there's something else transforming.
It's so true.
Doing the transformation. Mm-hmm. I don't know what verbs to use there, but creating the process that, just, it really just feels like a letting go into it.
It really is, yeah. Well, I guess we could say life's doing it.
Life's doing it.
Do you think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I was recording about was, that, or came up when I was recording, is that I realized always, even, you know, in the middle of the most difficult pieces of it, if something happens or an awareness pops through or something that sends a message to the system, you're okay, it's immediately fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a big clue in it somehow, that it's like all the actual aspects of the personality are fine.
Mm-hmm.
There's a complete letting go, there's a not caring how long this is gonna take, there's no need to get through it, there's nothing wrong, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So what I see in that is that the only actual suffering, the only suffering that the being is in, that's, you know, so to make that distinction between just an I who wants to suffer,
mm-hmm.
is the belief that this is not somehow not okay, mm-hmm. makes the person not okay.
Let me see if I follow that last bit. So there is, see if this is it, there is that within us which wants to suffer.
Yes.
Which we, but, you know, kind of, I mean, it's, the language is tricky because we use it in all kinds of different ways, but I think that's mostly what we're talking about when we say, like, egocentric karmic conditioning.
Exactly.
You know, that which really only cares to suffer.
Yep.
And then lately in our conversations, people have been talking about it as the being, you know, the being who suffers because there's an identification with egocentric karmic conditioning, but doesn't want to suffer, really wants to be free of it.
Right, right.
So what you're saying is that really the only suffering, say that again?
Well, for what I saw was the only suffering is when the being thinks, in my case, she's not okay.
Right.
On some level. And it really is, it's quite literally an identification with ego.
Mm-hmm.
Ego has an insatiable want, you know, desire. I mean, in a way it's funny because it doesn't want anything but the life force.
Only to suffer, yeah.
But it creates all kinds of quote wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, if I'm the whatever, the incarnation, get identified with ego's wants, and then I suffer. But actually, all I want is to be okay.
Yeah.
That fundamental, you know, conscious compassion, awareness, acceptance, love,
mm-hmm.
all those things. That's mm-hmm. all I really want. So the minute that need is met, there can be a falling away of the identification with the false needs of ego.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at that a little while ago. You were talking, I think, that, you know, so you notice that process is going on, as you were describing, where, you know, you should see it, and then I got to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I mean, that makes complete sense from conditioned point of view, obviously, because it's just ego wanting to suffer. But to see it from this other point of view, where we're talking from, it's easy to see, you know, there's really no point to that.
Right.
There's no point to trying to get out, because only I could try to be getting out of it.
Exactly.
And so the only thing that makes sense is kindness or love or compassion for the entity that is in all for that.
Yeah.
You know, he or she doesn't even really need to be outside of that.
Yeah.
As long as there's the compassion there that's needed, because that really sort of takes care of the whole thing.
Yeah, and I know we ought to move on, but I'm really glad you threw that in, because that does feel like, that feels like a fundamental place that I'm working right now, is that belief that, no, you know, ego coming in with, something has to get fixed here, mm-hmm. and then you can have love and kindness,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
but God, we gotta fix it. We gotta fix that so-and-so is mad at me, or this isn't gonna work out, or this, oh my gosh, there's too much of that, or, and then, oh, then we can be expansive again. But to right there, to work in that place, now, kindness and love, now, with this going on.
Yeah, and everything can be exactly the same.
Exactly.
In a way, it almost has to be, because that's as much part of the life experience of being a human as anything else.
And it's going to be.
It is going to be.
No matter how great, you know, it gets in the next minute. Oh, excellent. excellent, I'm getting what I want, okay, but yikes. It's so conditional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's taking that most fundamental need and just putting a condition on it.
Yeah.
And all of suffering just happens after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Linda.
Well, I think this is just by way of saying amen to both conversations. Is what I was seeing in a new way is how no beatings can be the change in behavior that leads to the change in consciousness.
Mm, that's good.
And it's that same place of there's nothing wrong, essentially.
That's exactly what we were talking about right at the end of that last conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because what I was looking at in my experience is when there are no beatings, the process is revealed. I don't even have to think about it.
We see it because the choice kind of throws a light on it.
It just drops in as a whole picture of mm-hmm. this is the process that has been happening, mm-hmm. that has been obscured by either beatings for being a wrong, bad person for doing the process, or there is something wrong and I've got to fix this. That obscures that mm-hmm. possibility, and I think because that's conditioning thinking,
mm-hmm.
it obscures the possibility of the everything I need to see about it simply dropping in,
mm-hmm.
which is an incredible moment that that does happen.
And I think the point you're making is that, well, a couple of them. One is that which seems really true, is that you know, not going to the beating is the change of behavior. Basically, it's going to make, ultimately, it's going to make a difference for us.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It will change consciousness because then we can see from a different conscious perspective.
Yeah, and it's that choice that you were saying that reveals a process that came before.
It makes room for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense because what we're supposed to do is, you know, it's the, you know, movement, you know, sensation, movement, sensation, you know, thought, all that. We get to the behavior, and then the behavior ultimately is a beating.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We don't really, it's funny because we don't make a distinctive step, but it really, it almost kind of is. There's the outward behavior, like, you know, I shout at some, whatever my behavior is, and then there's the beating that follows.
Right.
And then because of the mm-hmm. self-consciousness in the beating, mm-hmm. we go straight from that to begin, like Phil was saying earlier, straight to that, to beginning the cycle over.
There we are in the matter, exactly.
And there we are, go around and around and around.
Yeah.
And so to wake up in the beating, or right before the beating, mm-hmm. and choose, you know, kindness or compassion instead.
Or even drop the beating as soon as I become aware of it.
Yeah, so it could be during the beating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it suddenly stops everything short.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I can't think of exactly the right image, but it's like, you know, being really involved in like a project. This happened yesterday. Being really involved in a project, and then it's like tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels okay in a way, because there's just all this movement in this one direction, but then suddenly you hear the birds sing, or the sun comes out of a cloud or whatever, and then waking up to the whole thing that's happening around instead. It's like there's this little thing, suddenly you run into that, and then it reveals everything else that's going around that couldn't be seen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so yet another encouragement for no beatings.
No beatings, going down self-hatred.
Yeah.
Yeah. Penny.
Well, looking, I could just say yes.
And then we're
coming. But I want to say yes. As a way of sort of, you know, coming to it myself. So what I was seeing is, Phil was talking this, was that sort of what the image was of the stacking or sequencing of those patterns. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I really caught how, you know, I get to the point where I see that this is conditioning going on, and then I look at it through the eyes of conditioning, and that's my next sequence.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then, you know, then I reach some other point, and then my next sequence. And that was really helpful, and mm-hmm. it really made clear to me, in a new way, the importance of simply shifting the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking at the there's a part of what interferes with the shifting the attention is a belief, and that's also a kind of stacked thing that I'm just beginning to see. So there's something that happens. There's a there's a belief that I need to do something about it.
Right, which is that kind of the behavior in terms of practice that people have been talking about.
Yeah, and then there's a belief that I have to believe that I have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a second level of belief. Mm-hmm. You know, that on one hand I can say that I don't have to do anything about that, but someone, that's the identification, mm-hmm. someone really does think she has to do something about it. And it's like, I've seen it as like the lock on the box, you know? Mm-hmm. That I can see it all and still stay stuck. And the staying stuck is that belief that I can't move away from this.
Right.
You know, I have to do something about it. It's mm-hmm. like a second level or deeper or maybe more karmic commitment that says, I can't move on until.
Mm-hmm. So there's the belief, there's the particular belief that has to do with these circumstances that are coming up. That, you know, I have to do something about that,
yes.
and it looks kind of in a particular way.
Yes.
And then there's the underlying belief that one has to do something about things
yes.
in order to get by. And that's kind of the lock on the box of the whole
right.
kind of program and the stacking that happens.
I can't be... It's some sort of commitment to the person who does things about things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Aside from this particular thing.
Right.
You know, so it's a meta kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just like a basic orientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. basic identity and basic identification.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then what I was seeing in that, you know, the change of behavior of just stepping out of it are, is that it really is just stepping into a whole other universe. Mm-hmm. You know, it is stepping, it is moving to a different place. It's the place the mentor comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And stepping, it's more than even just, it feels like it's even more than just shifting attention. It is leaving the matrix.
Yeah.
It's leaving the tangle mm-hmm. and just not being there anymore.
Yeah.
And from that vantage point, then it is all clear.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like what I was hearing and what was just said was it's bigger than just even, because even within conditioning, I can shift attention.
Mm-hmm.
I can, so many times I'll see something and say, oh, I'm going to drop it.
Yeah,
well, 5 seconds later, I'm back in it.
Yeah, well, because would you say it's because it's shifting the attention?
It's shifting the attention. That's mm-hmm. right. And so the only way really to shift attention is actually to move
mm-hmm.
to a different place.
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of the encouragement that the guide's been giving us lately.
Yeah.
You know what I saw as you were saying that. I don't know if I can say it in different words, but then we've talked about it many times before. But that practice, basically practice, can be used to maintain suffering.
Oh, sure.
Because that second layer of belief, that's basically pseudo-Zen, in a way. Or could be, you know, for somebody...
You have to see this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. For somebody who does practice, that could easily become pseudo-Zen.
Yeah.
And so, gosh, in just a way that's just kind of creepy, you know, all this work and this effort we're putting into attention, instead of leading us away from suffering the way that we imagine, is actually reinforcing mm-hmm. it and reinforcing an I here that's in relationship with it and sort of closing the door. I'd really like to talked a minute ago about just leaving it. There's a doorway right there where it really is just setting this entire thing aside. You know, like Shira was saying the other night that, or at some point recently that, you know, the exploration is important and necessary for a number of phases in practice, but at some point we have to find willingness to just go through that door and just, as you're saying, just not live in that place anymore.
And not be the person who understands.
Mm-hmm.
Not be the person who solves things. Mm-hmm. Not be the person.
Not be the person. Yeah. In a way, for me at least, to not care.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how it's set up. You know, it's important to me not to suffer, you know, mm-hmm. kind of in pseudo-Zen language. Well, who cares, you know? That's kind of like we were saying before, you know, that's just as much a part of anything else. To experience pain or to go through everything it is to go through being a human.
So I just want to say one more thing, too, because I think I'm getting a glimpse of something that has been so, I've been wrestling with it, that this book, Ask the Awakened, that I'm struggling with. I love it. That's one of those things that, you know, but anyway, the thing he's been talking about for the last several readings was that we start with nothing. Everything starts from nothing. If you start with everything and go to nothing, you're going in the wrong direction. So, I just got a glimpse of that if I start with thinking that all of this is real,
mm-hmm.
and then I move out of that mm-hmm. to this other place, it's the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
When I move into that other place, what I get is there's nothing. And all of this is invented. All of this arises from out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to say that for me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I just got a glimpse.
Let me reflect that, see if I get it. So if you start from a place where there is no I, and there's no separation, and there's no suffering, then anything that comes along that says, you know, over here, it's going to, because you're starting from that place, that's going to, it's going to, the contrast will make it really obvious. It's like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But if you're starting from, if you're starting as an I, or how to say, you know, like being a somebody who's in relationship to life, whatever it may be, whether it's just life or whether it's life through the lens of practice, then almost like it's back here where you can't see it, so that everything that follows will be contaminated by that assumption.
That's right.
And so no matter where you go there, it's always, there's always going to be a duality and a subject-object relationship with it.
It's like, if I move out here, I'm really just taking a vacation from the real place, which is here.
Right, but if you start there, and you're taking it really kind of, I hope you couldn't call it
going to the amusement, going to the amusement park.
We're going on a little ride.
Really funny. I remember I was talking with someone about something, and I said that we are everything, and what he ended up saying was, well, we are actually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it did a little bit of a tilt for me, and then later on something came out of that conversation, which was, and from that nothing, everything arises.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form.
Yeah, I love the conversation, how we've been looking at if our attention keeps being directed toward the illusion and believing that the illusion is real, which is, I think, what we're talking about. It's like my favorite Wei Wu Wei quote, which is, we do not possess an ego, we are possessed by the idea of one.
Mm-hmm.
In that, we keep focusing on the ego, thinking that we're going to fix this, solve this, get over it, change it, correct it, get rid of it even.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just, it's really what we've been talking about, just it's focusing on life and leaving it behind. I understand how it's really important to understand what ego is, so that I know how it's going to come and fool me, mm-hmm. trick me. I remember really early on in the guidance appointment with Sherry, it's like, we really need to use the five processes to be able to see how it all works. I think she even used the analogy of, you know, being a substitute teacher in a classroom full of kids and not bothering to learn their names. You
it's
know,
gonna be it, ugly.
Yeah, it's, it really gets ugly. And and to a certain degree, what she was saying in the appointment that I had was, it's really important to do that. And it's funny, because I'm remembering, it's important to move on. And mm-hmm. as she said that, I imagine all of these things that I'm learning, seeing, I'm a 9 on the Enneagram, I'm a this and the whatever, and so on. It's like all this huge tower that's being built up. And as she was talking, I imagine the top of the tower is this big wrecking ball that comes by and smashes it all down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's like, I'm not any of that, which goes back to what I was looking at with, I am nothing.
Well, I think the way that you introduced it at the beginning is really significant, because you didn't say that it's my attention, it's not, you know, that's being directed, it's attention that's being directed.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a completely different thing.
It is.
Because it's just, it's like life is life's attention.
It is.
If it's mine, then we're in that relationship with condition that we were talking about a little while ago. If it's just attention, then we're not. It's just life, basically, like you could say, life exploring what it is to be human, life exploring what conditioning is. It's all coming from a really different place.
Exactly. And that's why, that's why it's unfruitful to focus on how conditioning gets obsessed with what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because if my attention is focused on that, I'm believing that it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're believing it's your attention.
That's my attention.
I'm so, like what I said a moment ago, you know, you're a person who is believing that.
Right.
Instead of, you're just life as it is manifesting in this way, even if it's a suffering way.
Yeah.
No, even if it's manifesting in an identity that believes something.
Yes, exactly, yes. Yes, and one thing that was coming up for me too in all of this was why change is so important in all of this, because as I was listening, it seemed like life can oftentimes jar me loose from that from the attention being drawn over to conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were describing with the, you know, the sun comes out from behind the clouds and, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, where was I? You know, it's like mm-hmm. the tunnel vision is suddenly just poof, it's gone. Yeah. I have that experience oftentimes in meditation too, where it's like it's all lost in here, and then all of a sudden, wow, there's a room here and there's people. and I just find it really interesting that life itself will just constantly keep going, hey, hey, mm-hmm. hey. And I think that what's offered in practice is the as we practice, there's this openness, or I become a conduit for that kind of poking of holes. How to describe it? It's almost like something along the lines of this happens, there's an ability to go in the direction life says. Mm-hmm. This happens, there's an ability to go in the life direction life
well,
says.
Willingness,
instead of being tied down to a stuckness.
Yeah, well, willingness to wake up, willingness to be open to the reminders that life is giving you.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a good thing,
receptive,
right? Because,
yeah.
you know, the other advantage that it has is, you know, we can practice with those little things. Because
mm-hmm.
My experience is, you know, if we don't, they just get bigger.
Yes.
You know, life, you know, says, life starts off with a little, like, you know, boop, 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 you know, and but then, you know, I don't want to deal with that, you know, and just, and then we get into, you know, deaths and diseases, and, you know,
yeah.
really, it takes something really huge to wake us up. Not that I'm not saying that life is intentionally causing us to have death and disease. It's just that it takes, if we're not practicing that openness you're talking about, it takes that to wake
it
us
does,
up.
Right.
And we don't want that, you know, or at least I don't. You know, I think what we want is to be able to, moment by moment, be, I think this is what you're saying,
yes, exactly.
to be receptive to those little incursions that life is providing, so that we can be as open and alive as we can be as we go through.
Exactly.
Instead of being kind of shocked into it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mickey. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a new favorite quote, and it really speaks to me to what we've been talking about this morning. I read it a few weeks ago, and it's everything is a mess and all is well.
Everything's a mess and all is well.
And I've just been loving that because what it does is when I all of a sudden find myself in that everything is a mess place, I just remember that all is well, and
mm-hmm.
then I'm not in the everything is a mess place anymore. Mm-hmm.
Just an instant disidentification.
It is. And it also seems so true to me, you know? Really, I mean, there's always something. There's always something that's
mm-hmm.
not working or mm-hmm. is not right or is out of order, or,
mm-hmm.
you know? And to just remember that, yeah, it's all mess and fundamentally, everything is well.
Yeah. Well, it's the perspectives of the two different places.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it's just, I think it was the juxtaposition of seeing those two in the same sentence
mm-hmm.
that really made it clear I can live in either place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can actually, voluntarily make that movement.
I can.
You know, the habit is going to be everything's a mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can make the, can almost form a new habit in a way. Well, it's not really a habit in a conscious way. But a new way of approaching life where, and it's all okay.
Yeah.
It's more like from here, everything is as it is.
Right.
There's
that's
no
right.
value judgment being put
right.
on it.
Right.
And it's all okay.
That's right.
Over here, everything's a mess and it's really a problem.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was during the assignment in the email class about watching sensation and emotion and thought and behavior when I really saw how huge the belief system was that there's something wrong and I have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Something wrong with me, I have to fix it. Something wrong with them, I have to fix them. Something
mm-hmm.
wrong with this, I have to fix it. And just particularly, in a way, something wrong with me. And
yeah,
I have
that's
to
where
fix
it starts.
It, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just became clear that I don't, that there isn't and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, which is actually hanging on my mother's refrigerator. It says, it was something along the lines of, everything will be okay in the end. It's not okay.
That's
it's
right,
not
the
end.
Exactly.
It kind of speaks to the same place.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
There's no reason to be concerned about it.
That's right. Yeah, but it was such a relief to really get, well, that's a belief that I need to be fixed, you know? I mean, and that part about you're talking about the pseudo-Zen taking over that place, you know, that seeing that I was doing practice a lot in order to be fixed.
Yeah, boy, that's something to see that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that somehow, I mean, it's not that our practice, I mean, I think as we all do this, that when that's going on, our practice isn't earnest or we're not doing, but it's just conditioning. It's so powerful and it's such an amazing way to be invisible behind the scenes. It's kind of like a virus or something, you know, it sort of infects our awareness.
Yeah,
and then it changes. It doesn't change it enough that we catch on to it.
Yeah.
Especially the more, it gets more subtle as we get more subtle. But it just in little ways basically turns everything into its opposite without us realizing. Jane, I saw your hands a moment ago. Is it past?
I just wanted to say, around my kind of experience of watching ego form an identity around a similar issue of looking for things that are in front of my nose, and then actually seeing how conditioning is building me into somebody who's part of their identity, which I didn't realise before coming to the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
At the monastery is going to be the person who looks for things and they can't be found, and that's going to need to be fixed. I see how ego is building things around practice.
It just keeps backing up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's just really interesting, and it kind of chimes with that feeling. So you get the body sensations of kind of panic and urgency. And the other day, fortunately, somebody had moved something that I was looking for, and the relief was unbelievable. And I was kind of like, that's really interesting. I hadn't realized how hung up I was on needing to find this thing.
Mm-hmm. Until you found it.
And so ego's building this whole piece of identity, and I can see it doing with other bits around practice. And how I have an opportunity to kind of stop that, but you know, to see that early, as it were, and kind of stop that and be open, as you were saying, to the experience of everything being okay, and the email class assignment we had around just being, see if I'm able to bring just being into doing, or to what extent I can bring just being into doing, and that kind of feeling that there's the end of the pyramid is attention in lots of detail, attention, and out here is awareness and how far I can move back into awareness and into life whilst doing this task, particularly if it's really, in quotes, important to kind of pull back from that and to watch that process of my attention and kind of expanding and out into this experience of letting world life be there.
Yeah, and all of that is without an I, isn't it?
Exactly.
You have to use the word I in order to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is without an I. What you're talking about is, like, you know, it's that place we always get to, or I always get to, is, you know, how can we do this without doing it?
Yeah.
You know, without being someone who's doing it?
Exactly. And it's actually difficult because the language that we have restricts our ability to convey the experience that we're trying to convey.
It does. Which is kind of a good thing in a way, because then we all have to kind of get there on our own, which is...
Yeah.
Kind of
good. And I guess that's why this is experiential, because someone says, what's that? And you go, what are you doing?
Yeah. When I project, what happens is, though, like, you're describing that. I mean, like, this, this is not going to be captured on the recording, but, you know, that pyramid bit.
Yeah.
And as you're doing that, you're sort of, you're conveying an experience.
Yeah.
And I think everybody in the room is looking to that experience, or attempting to find that experience in them.
Yeah.
And that's how it gets conveyed. It's like the language is up here, but there's this other thing happening where we're attempting to connect with the, at least in terms of our own experience, the experience you're having, and sort of receive what it would be awareness that you've had.
Yeah, and that same principle goes, I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain it, goes beyond language into, I think when we talk about things, for example, around sub-personalities, it's almost like that's somehow we're trying to convey a certain experience of life without it having to be a personality or I'm not able to explain that very clearly, but there's other aspects of practice, I think, where if ego gets hold of it, it can make it look a certain way that looks around, again, about identification, and actually what it is a certain type of experience that I put this being as having.
Let me see if I'm with you. I'm not sure if I am, but let me give it a try. So we might talk about a subpersonality, for example, as a way to reflect the life that is happening that's underneath that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we'll talk about it, Buddhism has talked about it as the negative way. You know, we can't really talk about awakening or freedom or something. We have to talk about what it's not, really, to sort of get there. And so as we talk about, like, an aspect of the personality, there's this person who, like that, that kind of sets, that, like, puts in a package everything that's not authentic and puts it someplace so that we can, so that what is authentic can be there and we can see it.
I don't know how to explain, because that's still... The subpersonality stuff is still a bunch of emotions and energy and sensations that this being is having and is part of their life experience.
Let me give it a try. So if we identify with those feelings and thoughts and everything, then we're no longer connected with life.
Yeah.
Which is what that makes that useful as something to consider.
Yes.
The thing about, we're talking about pseudo-Zen a little while ago, aspects of the personality is the number one, at least as far as I can tell, when I hear people talking and when I look at what happens for me, the number one place where we can get stuck in that kind of pseudo-Zen, because it's so difficult to recognize an I who's here when we believe it.
Yeah.
And so, I might say, well, there's a part of me who, and the language of the practice says, well, I can recognize that that's I can see that's a part of me and that's not me. Mm-hmm. But it's what we were talking about all morning, really. But it's a part of me who says there's a part of me. And that's what we can't get past.
Yeah. So it's almost the subject object relationship, the sense of judgment about that experience.
Exactly.
Not allowing it to be part of us.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thanks.
Andrew.
This just basic stimulus response, when the response doesn't happen, it either right before it or right after, it doesn't matter when I catch it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm getting kind of lost. It's this, the response doesn't happen, the one that always used to, the knee-jerk one doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
This world, there's this, like right when the bell rings, there's this gap of, it's time for awareness. It's, mm-hmm. That's your call to awareness is now available or mm-hmm. is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right at that spot, if conditioning comes in and substitutes for awareness and tries to pretend that now awareness is happening,
mm-hmm.
It's bone crushing.
Mm-hmm.
In when awareness wakes up, that's not, and then it's kind of falling apart.
Let me try to reflect that. So, like, to use a image for what's that word? Like a metaphor. So, like, let's say you're in a relationship with another person, and you've got this kind of habitual, they do what they do, you do what they do. You've got this kind of pattern that you do.
Whether they're 5 years old or 45 years old.
Yeah, it could be anybody. And so you do what you do, and they don't do what they do. They do something else. Suddenly there's this gap right there. And so the gap could be filled with, oh, wow, that was different. What's going on with me? It's like what everybody was talking about this morning. It's like suddenly there's this thing to kind of bump up against or run into that reflects where you're coming from.
Use the word the whole world, there's a whole world there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either, if I catch that I'm about to do the response and I catch that whole world there, that, oh wow, that's really how that goes. Mm-hmm. And then the response, oh, I don't have to do the response. Right. Or the right, when somehow the response doesn't happen, then I wake up, whoa, I just didn't do the response. There's these whole huge worlds that are awareness is available right on either one of those.
Yeah, gaps of awareness, I think you said.
And right in that, I was just noticing that right in that gap, if awareness is enjoying itself, there's this wowness, there's life and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't that, then I just think I've done something, or now I'm a hero, or now mm-hmm. I'm the center of it. Now, and that's when bone crushing mm-hmm. happens. Even if I didn't, that in itself is bone crushing, because yeah. that's not what I want. Anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, conditioning, of course, is going to, I think this is what you're saying, is going to put a cork in that hole as quickly as possible. Because it is, there's a gap, there's a possibility of awareness there. And in my experience, a lot of times, if just talking about in terms of behaviors, the behavior that happens in those little gaps or something unexpected happens, a lot of times is a lot worse than the habitual patterns. Because there's all this other stuff that those habitual patterns sort of patching up and kind of taking care of.
You might be better off just going for the habitual patterns. I'm just not, there just seems to be this, like, what do I do about it kind of thing, mm-hmm. of awareness kicking in, right? For me, it's somehow the behavior doesn't happen, and then there's this gap of awareness of, hey now, mm-hmm. and right there is I think what I've experienced mostly is this conditioned response of pseudo-zen of, oh, now I fixed it, mm-hmm. kind of thing, and now I can move on, or right. now I'm beyond all that. Yeah. And it seems, just noticing it here, that's what I'm using is bone crushing, where I guess it's mm-hmm. I guess I'm still caught in the thing that I am the bones and I'm getting crushed. There's still no expansive release of. It seems like I'm caught in this gap instead of enjoying the gap or free in the gap or. Mm-hmm.
Well, what I've been hearing people say all morning is that we actually don't want to do anything about it when that gap shows up. That's kind of the problem. I mean, that's, you know, you just said a kind of form of that. You know, you want to, you know, figure it out and do something about it. You know, that's how conditioning comes in to try to fill the gap. Mm-hmm. You know, what if that gap is there, and then, you know, there's the, you know, boy, it's a place where it's impossible to talk about it without an eye, but there's the possibility that life can fill the gap, that we can trust life enough that we can allow that gap to be there and not need to fill it up with basically our conditioned survival. Mm-hmm. system, and let it take care of whatever needs to be taken care of.
Instead of either the assumption that I've now fixed something, or the quote-unquote exploration or interest in how I avoided that by stopping the response.
Mm-hmm. And both of those, even though it looks a lot like practice, both of those are just keeping holy knowing.
Right, exactly. So there's this this gap can be filled with something other than either of those mm-hmm. quote unquote interests, which are not that interesting. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the kind of koan is, well, if life fills the gap, then what's that look like? Mm-hmm. I keep thinking about those, you know, the old Zen stories where mm-hmm. the student comes to the master and asks a question, and the master just does something bizarre. I project that's where that's coming from. You know, there's this gap, and it can get filled with something that's completely different.
I just saw this, that the stimulus response thing is when the gap comes in, that's now the new, that's the stimulus for this old response, instead of the, what you're pointing at is the, that's marvelous. That's the thing, is the response, I just saw it, this, when the gap opens up is not the stimulus to bring conditioning in. Mm-hmm.
It could be the trigger for awareness, for example.
La la la.
Yeah. Yeah, and then of course, as we've been saying all morning, it's not my awareness, it's just awareness. Okay, that's our time. Thank you.